Hopefully, this will be an ish reflection. Thinking ishly has helped me so much over the years since I read this incredible book that gives us permission to do, well, anything not perfectly, but rather to simply enjoy doing that thing. Ish can become a philosophy. When I taught 7th grade English, I read ish to every one of my classes. I wanted to have the reference point of this story and the concept of ish to tell any given student who may really be struggling that their work was poem-ish or essay-ish or whatever-ish. This allowed an intellectual place for us to meet comfortably and to start working on how to make whatever they were doing even more-ish, even better to their eyes. Because sometimes having a poem that is poem-ish may or may not get us the grade that we want. Instead, it gives us something so much better. We get the ability to know that what we create is good. It is ish, regardless of any assessment grade. Grades matter, of course, but is it possible? They don't matter as much as we emphasize them in our society. Is it sometimes more important to foster curiosity and a desire to try new things, even if one might not be able to succeed in these things in traditional ways? The act of doing and creating and being also matters. Doing things ishly doesn't mean not trying your best or doing less. It means giving something your all, preferably enjoying the process of it, learning from it, and knowing you and the work you have created has value no matter what the grade is. Living a life of ish means exploring and trying new things. It means enjoying what we want to do. It means you can call yourself an artist right now because your artistic creations are especially ish. They are extraordinary because you are extraordinary. We hear all the time how we are sacred beings with a sacred calling to bring our gifts to the world. Our gifts might be things we think we are horrible at, or that if we did them, people would tease us or say mean things like Ramon's brother Leon. It matters that we share our passions, our gifts, our creativity. When I was in art school, my favorite professor, Professor Rosenblatt, always told us, you go to art school to learn what not to do. This means in his class, we had to break away from our formal training and create, truly create. And sometimes those creations were, by technical standards, pretty horrible. I have a feeling that had Rosenblatt read the book Ish, he would have told each of us that our paintings were painting-ish. What happened that first semester of throwing out what we had been taught was the so-called correct way and just creating was that we all became much better artists. We learned to really see things. We learned to look past what the eye thought it saw and to create our vision of what we saw with our ish eyes. Ish means pushing yourself, challenging yourself to try something new, to do something you've always done, but in a new way. I didn't follow my ish path, admittedly, for many years. I didn't draw or paint or use that part of my creativity for over a decade. This type of art only came back into my life a few years ago, and it was the ish idea that brought it back. I kept thinking there was no point, that my talent was likely gone by now, and I couldn't stand the thought of creating something awful. And you know what? those first few drawings were, by technical standards, truly awful and wonderful beyond words to create. I was doing it. I would get better, and even if I didn't, I didn't care. It just felt good to move color over paper. And my art supplies and I will live ishly ever after.
Thank you so much, Cindy, for sharing with us the story of Ish from your own life. I'm sure I speak for many of us when I say that having someone teach me about the power of Ish would have meant a lot to me when I was younger. When I was in elementary school, I really loved art class. I remember in third grade, art class was on Wednesdays. And so Wednesdays became my favorite day of the week. My art teacher was so nice, and her classroom was so colorful, and we did all sorts of neat and creative projects. I was always excited to see what we would get to do next in art class. Now for fourth grade, we were all invited to apply to be in what was called Horizon Art. This was a program for the top artists in our grade. It was meant to help nurture their interest in art and to give them more enriching projects. And here's what I got really excited about. Students who got selected for Horizon Art got to have an extra art class during the week. How cool is that? If I got into Horizon Art, I would have two favorite days of the week, not just Wednesdays anymore. So of course, I applied. All I had to do was select about 4 or 5 pieces from art class to submit as my portfolio. I remember vividly 8-year-old me just toiling over this decision. Which would be more impressive, my painting of a clown or my turtle made entirely of marker dots? It was an impossible choice. In the end, my portfolio was not selected, and I didn't make it into Horizon Art. Art class for me remained only on Wednesdays. My teacher never told me that I wasn't good at art. Unlike Ramon, nobody ever laughed at my painted clown or my dotted turtle. But when I got that letter telling me that I would not be invited into the Horizon Art program, the unspoken message that I heard was, "Oh, Allie, you are just not an artist. This just isn't your thing." After that, I never really got excited about art in the same way that I had before. Wednesdays were now just another day of the week. I have a hunch that most, if not all of us, have similar stories. Stories about times in our lives when it felt like doors shut in front of us because we received some sort of message that we weren't good at something. And my hunch also tells me that for many of us, that something was likely a creative practice. Perhaps for you, maybe it wasn't visual art. Maybe it was music or dance or problem solving or writing. Maybe for you it was acting or cooking or design or strategizing for a better future or inventing. Whichever doors may have shut for you, don't you just wish you had someone there to read you the story-ish? I know personally, I would love to go back in time to 8-year-old me and hand her this book and celebrate her clown-ish and turtle-ish masterpieces with her. Perhaps then, today, answering Kim's invitation to draw or doodle or color or create would feel a bit more natural to me, a bit less foreign. So, in the spirit of Ish, I hope you will join us for our deep dive into creativity this entire month. We've got a lot going on. Worship services, exploring creative practices. We've got short workshops after each service led by one of you. We've got creativity kits to pick up at the fellowship. And we even have a creativity calendar with daily tasks that you can follow along with. All of this getting us playing and working those muscles of creativity ishly in so many different ways. An experience in adulthood that has helped me reignite my own creativity has been taking improv classes. So I'm so excited that Reverend Christina is leading a service next week that's all about improv. One of my amazing improv teachers, Rick Andrews, is a professional improv comedian and teacher in New York City and just an all-around stellar human who also leads a lot of improv and creativity workshops with businesses and with corporations. And he's great at it. And he recently wrote this post on social media. He said, "Sometimes the way people talk about creativity makes it seem like it's a thing you either have or don't have. I've always had a mild issue with the term creatives for this very reason. Creativity is something our brains want to do naturally. They want to make connections, fill in gaps, create. People we think of as being creative don't have better ideas to begin with. They become better at shaping those ideas through time and practice, usually by being less judgmental of themselves. Becoming more creative is so much more about getting out of your own way than it is about learning how to have good ideas in the first place. Getting out of your own way. Being creative is about getting out of your own way. Isn't that what the story of Ish teaches us to do? To get out of our own way? To rid ourselves of the judgment and expectations so that we can just enjoy creating and doing the stuff that our brains and our hearts want to do? That's why I think that it is so cool that this year, our stewardship team chose the theme of creativity for our fellowship's pledge campaign, which starts today. This is the time of year when we make our financial pledge to our beloved fellowship community. When we tell the fellowship how much money we plan on giving this year in order to continue supporting all the staff, the programming, the building, the online offerings, our religious education program, you name it. Now, I need to say this. From the moment I arrived here at the fellowship, it has been so clear to me time and again that this is a generous congregation. This is a community of people who show up for each other without question. A community of people who are always excited to give whatever resources or time or energy they can in order to provide support. I mean, just look at the overwhelming support for the minister's discretionary fund since the pandemic started. Just look at our fellowship's meal ministry, friends providing meals to others in times of stress. Just look at the requests for assistance in our Facebook group and how people in comments have jumped at the chance to offer support. Our fellowship community does not hesitate to say, if there is someone in need, of course, we're going to do whatever we can to help. That is beautiful. That is special. That is inspiring. The thing is, pledging involves a bit more creativity than that kind of in-the-moment, immediate generosity. Our pledges are what our fellowship needs in order to exist and to grow, but it can be hard to think ahead and figure out how much money we will be able to give this year. It's so easy to wonder, am I pledging too little? Am I pledging too much? What is the right amount for me and my family to pledge this year? It becomes so easy to put off the decision to pledge. And then if you're like me, someone who freezes in moments of indecision, it becomes so easy to just keep our pledge the same as last year or to forget to submit our pledge form entirely. So, what if we got out of our own way? What if we used some creativity? What if we thought about all that the fellowship community means to us and the ways it enriches our lives, and then just came up with a number? Like, if I could, I would give my fellowship this much this year. Now, it's a big bummer, but creativity does need to be balanced with some realism, I suppose. So I would recommend that we take whatever number that was and we bring it to our budgets to see what version of it is actually feasible. Perhaps we have to scale it down a bit. Perhaps we realize that this year times are hard and we need to fill out a pledge waiver, and that's understandable. Or perhaps we realize, hey, the pandemic didn't hit our family as hard as we worried it might, and this number might actually be doable. whatever happens, just know that there's no perfect pledge amount. There's no correct number. All of our pledges are going to be pledge-ish. They are all a work of art simply because they are inspired by our love for this community and our vision for its future. Just the act of submitting our pledge form creates a moment of beauty. You see, pledging and creativity are so intertwined, actually, because they're all about possibility, opening doors. It's easy when we're a part of a congregation like the fellowship to sit back and to think creativity and vision is the job of the staff and the governing board. And the reality is that this fellowship community is something that we are all co-creating creatively together with our relationships, our ideas, our time, our energy, our presence, and our money. For example, did you know that without everyone's pledges, our staff has no idea what we can budget for in the future, what it is that we're able to plan for. But as pledges come in, that's when possibilities open up. The possibility for engaging and meaningful worship. The possibility for enriching programs for all ages. The possibility to expand our capacity for justice and inclusion. The possibility to more fully support our staff and their families. The possibility to contribute purposefully to Unitarian Universalism's impact in our country and our world. And I know that this congregation can imagine possibilities. You've done it before. In the fall of 2019, together, you imagined the possibility of hiring an intern. The possibility of creating an intern minister position as a loving tribute to the legacy of Reverend Roger Birchhausen, our minister emeritus. You imagined the possibility with such enthusiasm and creativity and trust that this community raised enough money to bring me on board for a year. I am here because of your creativity, the creativity that was expressed in financial gifts. And boy, am I grateful. Grateful to be here, learning and growing alongside this very special community of people. I can't thank you enough. So I'll just ask, what other possibilities can we imagine together if we get out of our own way? May it be so. And amen.